Welcome to Super Talk, the podcast that scratches your superhero itch. Just two suburban dads nerding out over superhero stuff on the small screen and the big. Buckle up, people. Enjoy the ride.
Welcome to Super Talk, the weekly podcast dedicated to news and reviews of comic book media on the big and small screen. This is episode number 57. I'm your host, Brian Professor Pettis, and with me, as always, is my illustrious co-host, Titanium Tony Estrella. Titanium.
Hey, Super Bowl weekend.
Yeah.
Super Bowl weekend. Awesome.
The hype and anticipation over, hopefully, what we get to see during Super Bowl. I swear to God, it's the one event that the commercials matter. us, especially.
Yeah, especially since, I mean, I don't have any skin in the game. Either team wins, I'm okay. Whether it's
just want a good game.
The
something
LA Rams or the Cincinnati Bengals, either one. I like both the quarterbacks a lot. I like Matthew Stafford a lot. But, you know, either one of the teams, I'll be fine. But you're right. I'm more excited about the Marvel trailers and what are we going to get during those trailers. I sent you something today. Did you see that? I sent you a little picture that I guess Empire Magazine did an exclusive about Moon Knight and had some photos, unreleased photos. And we finally saw Mr. Knight, Mark Spector in the Mr. Knight costume. And it looks badass. It looks really cool. But we can get into that a little later when we're in the stuff. But yeah, I'm excited for the Super Bowl. Are you in any pools?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you in the one at ICC?
Yeah.
The big dollar one.
Well, big dollar. It's like $100 a square or whatever. So, I mean, and the way they're doing, you know, normally it's whatever your numbers you get pulled and then whatever you have at the end of each quarter, you know, you get a winner. And they decided to change it up this year where now they're, every change of score, somebody's going to win some money.
Yeah.
Not just at the end of the quarter, which is fun because it does have more winners, so more chances of winning. And then they're changing the numbers every quarter too, which is, I mean, I guess that's because you get some crappy numbers. You're like, oh, well, they're only going to last one quarter. So,
right.
You know, it all comes.
I didn't know they were changing numbers every quarter.
It's insane.
Good,
because
my first, there's two giant posts, right?
Yeah.
Two giant blocks. My first block, the one that Gabby picked, is awesome. And then the one that I picked, the second blocks that Gabby picked is awesome on the first sheet. And the second sheet, the one that I picked, is horrible. It's like...
But you didn't see they're changing numbers every quarter?
I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
I'll have to
that
share
might
it
help
with
me.
You. Yes. And so, yeah, you know, you can end up winning some money. But, you know, it's fun to have some skin in the game and root for something. You know, that's what's kind of fun. But
I'm in a couple pools, too. That's one of them. Both those sheets, I got two blocks in that. So,
yeah, it'll be fun. All right. Well, one thing I want to announce, and I want to throw out a massive apology to my co-host Titanium as well as our fans.
I get it.
You know, we've been talking about the last few weeks that Fairfax Comic Con is coming to Chantilly Expo Center March 5th, and we're all excited about it.
Yep.
And, you know, Titanium and I are making plans and ordering swag and all this other stuff, and then I finally realized that is the weekend that I am in Knoxville, Tennessee to visit my daughter. And I just never put two and two together, you know, until I actually booked my plane flight. I'm like, wait a minute, do I have something else going on that weekend? Oh crap, it's Fairfax Comic Con. So I apologize, Titanium. I will not be able to be there, but I believe you're still going, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna go. I'm gonna represent, just answer questions, meet some people, meet some
hand
fans.
Out some swag.
I'm gonna hand out a little bit of swag. I might sell swag, to be honest with you, at this point, recoup some costs.
Oh God, but, I was gonna give you some comics to bring with you. Maybe I won't if you're gonna be selling stuff. I might not come home with anything, or maybe a few thousand dollars.
Well, I'm not gonna charge that much, but I'm gonna give away a couple of things. That's for sure. Yeah, just to try to promote the show and meet some people and be there to represent a little bit. And then in August, 2 weeks after this Comic-Con, in August, they're having another mini Comic-Con, same place, same bat channel, same bat time, and we'll do that in August.
We will be there for that one.
Yeah.
So,
and we'll record then.
We won't record our show that weekend, but we will have an episode that weekend. We will record an episode that Sunday evening. But yeah, I'm glad you're going. I'm glad you're going to be there representing Super Talk and meeting the fans and checking out what's there. I mean, that, you know, being amongst our people, right? So that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just hope I don't get barraged with too many hard questions like, oh, really? So who is? I was like, oh, no. But yeah, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. I'll be there.
And I'm sorry to you and the fans. We really wanted to do our show from there and we were excited about it. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I get to go down and spend the weekend with my daughter. So that's, you know,
that's always important.
Exactly. All right. Well, and we also want to thank the patrons that bring the show to you. These are the listeners that have chosen to sponsor the show directly. $1 per episode. Patreon.com/supertalk is how you become a patron. And, you know, these are people that are saying, hey, we're willing to donate $1 to these guys every time they put something new out. And that's all we do. And that money goes directly back into the show. So thank you for the patrons we have. And if you want to join, patreon.com/supertalk.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
All right. Let's get into the reviews. Peacemaker episode 7 this week,
off the charts.
I mean, you know, we have not had a bad episode. We have not had a filler episode. We have not had a you know, just a stinker episode. I mean, every single one of them, you know, again, the plot is moving forward. There's enormous, like, relevant content in each episode, and this was a doozy. This one was really focused and centered around the relationship between Peacemaker and his father, and ultimately, you know, the relationship he had with his brother as he was growing up, and him coming to terms with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, some finality to that as well. Big episode as far as that was concerned, and I think is really setting us up for a really nice finale next week.
Yeah, it's a total story, and we find out how his brother died. We find out that Peacemaker is going through a character arc. He's still a douchebag, but you're starting to feel more for him, and he's starting to show that he's more human, and he's been torn down by his father with years of abuse, and you understand more about that abuse, and you understand more who he is because of that abuse from his father. And it was great. And John Cena chops.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that one scene where he's, you know, tears running down his eyes, it was believable for me. Completely believable. And James Gunn, a master. Absolutely brilliant writing, how he can get you from on the edge of your seat in tears and so emotional about the characters, and then throw a zinger in there, like, you know, Vigilante just throws these zingers. It's great. This was one of my favorite episodes for that. So great show. Let's go through it.
Yeah, well, we start the episode off, and Peacemaker and Vigilante are back at the headquarters, and they are listening on the news. Peacemaker's there to gather all his crap, but they're listening on the news that now they're, you know, the most wanted, you know, Chris Smith, the Peacemaker, is the most wanted criminal, and all of the police are out to get him. Of course, all of the police are butterflies at this point in time, but they're basically, you know, announcing on the news that he is, you know, criminal suspect number one, and we're out to get him. And he's like, screw this, you know, whatever, we're going to have to go off and kill this cow, you know?
Great line in the beginning about when Vigilante said, I thought you didn't have a diary. He's like, absolutely, I didn't have a diary. Plus, look at that thing. It looks like it fell out of my vagina.
Yeah, and he was saying stuff like, he said, you know, it's all these cartoons and sentences. I don't do that. That's not me. You know, it was pretty funny. But you know, we basically found out that was planted, right? Yeah. Or confirmed that it was planted.
Right.
So
he was going to be the patsy for the whole thing, the whole mission about killing butterflies and the aliens and all the body count. He was going to take the fall for it, and Amanda Waller was setting him up to take the blame for everything.
And we got confirmation of that because very shortly after, we got a scene with Leota and Harcourt, and they're in, Harcourt goes to Leota's apartment and confronts her and says, hey, you know, you're the one that planted the diary. You know, we know you did it. And yeah. She's like, yes, my mom made me do it. Who's your mom? Amanda Waller. What? You're working for Waller? You know, so we got confirmation that she was only doing it because her mom told her, and she had lost her job, and it was a way for her mom to get her to work for her, and that's the only reason you took this job. And Harcourt was like, look, I don't care what the reasons were. You're good at this. You're really good at this job, you know, and you should, you know, Leota's like, I'm done. I'm quitting. I'm going back home or whatever. And Harcourt's like, you know, you shouldn't leave. We need you. And then right after that, Judo Master shows up and
great fight scene.
Oh, the girls get attacked.
The choreography on that and the filming of that with the cameraman moving around in all angles. And it was just brilliant. I thought it was great. It was a great fight scene between Harcourt and Judo Master. But before that, Judo Master was hanging out in this Quickie Mart eating his flaming chips. I mean, his flaming Cheetos.
Right.
Flaming hot Cheetos. And two punks come and they're arguing about Boondocks, you know, about the Boondock Show, which is funny.
Boondock Saints?
Yeah. They're like, you know, Boondock Saints is great. What are you talking about? And then they see him and they're making fun of him and he's just popping these flaming hot Cheetos. And then they come out and
they call him like a midget or something like that. Or no, they call him the leprechaun. Are you,
leprechaun.
Yeah, where are your lucky charms, you know, right. Or something like that, right? Yeah.
Then he ends up kicking their ass and taking their car. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
I'm still not sure how Judo Master fits into all of this, but he seems to be this protagonist that keeps popping in these hilarious events every once in a while.
And he escapes every time they capture him or recapture him. He escapes again, which is hysterical.
That's
how he ends up showing up at the apartment. They have a fight scene. You know, Harcourt and him are going at it, and you know she's skilled, obviously, and they're having a good fight scene. And then ultimately, Leota comes up with a taser and takes him out again. But that you know kind of ends that fight scene, but a very very good fight scene. But then Murin ends up showing up at the apartment and saying, hey, you know, we're on the run. The cops are after us. They found that, you know, they've got a warrant out for Peacemaker's arrest. You know, we need to get moving. And, you know, they're getting their stuff together. And then all the cops show up at the Leota's apartment. And, you know, they break in and kill Murin. Yeah. And
well, before that, Murin actually confesses that he knows that Leota is what's her name's
works
mom.
For Waller.
Yeah, not only works for Waller, but is his mom. He goes, Leota, you don't think I do a background check on the people that I'm working with?
Right.
So he knew that was Waller's daughter.
Right.
Right.
So he knew it the whole time, but he didn't care.
No, he didn't care.
And but then he ends up getting killed. You know, what was it? Detective Soto, I think is her name.
Yeah.
She comes in and just blasts him right in the chest. And then the butterfly comes out of Murin's mouth and then she ends up grabbing it and, you know,
recognizes
who it is.
Yeah.
As far as the butterflies are concerned, and then ends up like crushing it. So he's dead, you know, not only is Murin dead, but the butterfly that was, you know, possessed Murin is dead as well.
Yeah. There was a scene there where one of the co-partners, I guess her partner, says you murdered him, and she goes, he was a warrior, he was never going to turn and work with us, he was always going to, and with him they have a chance of foiling our plans of moving the cow, and without him they don't have a chance, it had to be done. So that was a little weird that he called her out that you murdered him. It was just bizarre, but it was a good scene.
Yeah, and Harcourt and Leota come in after the police leave and see him dead or see the butterfly dead and have kind of a moment with the butterfly as it's dying. But then we get a scene of we kind of fast forward. It's now Peacemaker, Vigilante, and Economist in a van, and they're driving towards the...
Yeah, they decided to head towards the cow to take the cow out by themselves.
Right. And White Dragon and his, you know, hooded cronies are tracking them. They're like, oh, we've got a beeline on them. We're tracking them. We see them, and he's flying in his White Dragon costume,
cool, badass.
And then just takes the van out.
Yeah.
Knocks it over, and then comes up to the side of it, rips a hole in it, and, you know, uses his blasters, and is like, holy crap.
He's got like a low jack and Peacemaker's helmets. So he can see there's some helmets at the police station that they confiscated, but there's these other helmets moving towards on this road. So they make a beeline for him. I thought that was cool.
And Peacemaker figures that out, that he's using the helmets to track him. So he ends up tying it to a raccoon, and the raccoon's running through the woods.
He gets all scraped up trying to catch the raccoon, and Economist goes, you know, that That's exactly how I imagined a man trying to pick up a raccoon, how that would work out. That was hilarious.
It was pretty funny. But eventually, you know, there's a confrontation. They end up catching up with Peacemaker.
A little throwback to Rocket Raccoon there, right?
Right,
Rocket,
a little Rocket bit. But Peacemaker and White Dragon are fighting. Vigilante jumps in, and we kind of get the payoff of the earlier comment he made that there's some seams in that armor that make it vulnerable, and he basically, you know, gets a knife in between some of the seams in his neck and stabs the dad in the back
and disabled his jetpack,
right, and all of his technology. But you know, ultimately, and Peacemaker takes out Eagly. Eagly goes nuts, and I mean, not Peacemaker. White
Dragon
takes out Eagly. Eagly tries to go after him, and White Dragon just punches him.
Yeah,
knocks him to the ground, yeah. And you know that sets Peacemaker off. And ultimately, Peacemaker's beating on his dad. And then he ends up shooting him straight in the head. And
what a scene! What an emotional scene!
Yeah.
Well, Economist comes back with a machine gun and takes out all the hooded goons that are with the White Dragon, which was badass because earlier Vigilante throws a grenade or drops a grenade in front of White Dragon. It kind of blows him up because he's got a beeline on Peacemaker, which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
He survived, but he's, you know, pretty banged up and wounded in the woods. And then that scene, they both Economist and Vigilante come back and they're like talking to Peacemaker. And it was emotional. It was kind of good because you could see in Cena, he actually played it so well. You could see his torture of him killing his father. Yes, his father was a white supremacist, a total bastard.
Douchebag.
A total bastard. And he still has feelings for him. He's still his father.
And that's why when we kind of got the flashbacks of his childhood, we saw the scene of him and his brother sitting in their room together, just jamming out to Motley Crue. And they're just like talking, you know, they're putting up the devil signs, and he goes, "Is that white power?" And he goes, no, screw that. It just means we're going to smoke dope and tongue hot chicks all day, you know? And he's like, oh, yeah, that's great. And then the dad somebody walks in and says, hey, it's time for you guys to go. And they just jump up. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they're going to have a, you know, it's
all a betting round. It's like a cockfight with two young kids.
All the adults are betting on who's going to win a fight between the two boys, and they're all up for it. You know, this is just kind of what they do, right? And so they're in this little pit, and the two of them are facing off and punching each other or whatever, and you see some blood on both of them. But ultimately, Peacemaker, or Chris, hits his brother basically in the temple with a punch and knocks him out. And he's like, yeah, I won. And then his brother's like writhing on the ground, you know, having a seizure and ends up dying.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how he ended up killing his brother. And but he told his father when he killed him, said, I realize, you know, I'm not responsible for him dying. You are. You're the ones who made us do that. Yeah. You're the one who put us in that situation. Yeah. So he kind of came to peace with that, I think.
Yeah. He was foaming at the mouth, though. I guess that's what happens when you have a seizure.
Got hit in the temple and, you know, basically had an aneurysm or whatever. And
maybe we find out later that somebody to win that fight bet a lot of money could have poisoned him, but I don't know.
Whatever.
It's just stretching.
I mean, you know, he did, you know, land the blow that ended up killing him, but he was in that situation because of his dad.
Yeah.
You know, and his dad's a big douchebag.
I mean, absolutely.
You understand that.
He's an absolute horrible, horrible person.
But, you know, shot him straight in the head, so he's dead, you know, so White Dragon is done. And then from there, the team ends up going back. They go to a veterinarian's office, and this was hysterical too. They end up going to a veterinarian's office because he's worried about Eagly, you know, and the vet, you know, is able to treat Eagly, and he's like, you know, praying. He's like, oh, I hope he's okay. And then Eagly recovers, and he stands up, and he hugs Peacemaker, and Leota sees
the Eagly
hugging Peacemaker. She's like, I just saw an eagle hug a grown man. She says, I never thought I'd see something like that. You know, this is like amazing.
What a testament to James Gunn's writing. I mean, here he is in this emotional. He's praying for his best friend, his sidekick, Eagly. And it's very emotional. And he's praying for him. And then you still see that Peacemaker is a douchebag. He's like, you know, when I was in prison, I should have never left you in that garage. I should have hooked up with some really ugly chick and made her watch you. And then, you know, maybe dumped her when I came to get you and have her on the line.
I wouldn't even have sex with her. Okay, maybe once, courtesy.
Yeah. What a douchebag. But in a very touching moment. I mean, that was like when he just you know, killed his father. You know, Vigilante comes and pats him, and he's like, "Why are you doing your face exercises?" And an economist is like, "He's crying, you idiot."
Yeah.
You know, it's great. Vigilante was a superstar in this. I thought he was absolutely fantastic. I thought the character arc for Peacemaker is brilliant. You really feel for the guy now, even though you know he's a douchebag, and you're starting to accept what a moron he is.
Right.
Yeah, that was an amazing scene when Leota kind of realizes that, you know what, this guy does have something. He is who he is. He's a douchebag for sure, but I feel bad about portraying him.
Well, and the team is now struggling with what do we do now, because Murin's not around, and how are we going to move forward with Murin? And they all decide, hey, we have somebody that can lead us, and they look at Harcourt, and she's like, okay, let's
here's
do
the
it.
Plan.
And
yeah.
Here's the plan. And then all the vets who had been tied up were like, you know, we're in. And, you know, they're like, no, you guys can't come.
Absolutely. We'll get killed the first few seconds you're not coming. That's hilarious. She's like cocking the gun. We're in. You know, yeah, they like, got all fired up.
So funny. But then we see them, you know, kind of heading off to where the cow is. And then, you know, what we had heard from the police was that there was a strategy to move the cow. And we're like, how are they going to move the cow? And they're like, well, it's teleportation. And we see him unloading these trucks and bringing all this equipment into the barn. And then we get this big reveal. They have this massive underground lair where the cow is. And the cow is a humongous alien something.
Worm.
You know,
it's some kind of... like a larva, caterpillar, worm,
and
with several eyes and one giant long pointed tooth.
Yeah, and it's like being milked.
It's
and
being
you can
milked,
just see all this. It's being milked, and it's enormous. So,
but the butterfly's plan is to teleport it somewhere safer, somewhere out of there, and they'll
just another location that nobody can track.
Right,
and so the team it has to get there before they're able to teleport the cow away. So that is where this series is going here in the last episode, but. Really good episode. I mean, again, this series has been so great. You know, and you and I were talking about this last week, the James Gunn movie that he did, Slither, which was the one that you were talking about. It's like that's one of his old movies, which, funny enough, was a plot of a bunch of aliens who came to Earth and were taking possession of human bodies in a attempt to overtake, you know, the planet. So very similar storyline that we were getting here with this, with the butterflies, but you know, some analogies there to his Slither movie, which is kind of funny, but I mean, it's been great. And these characters are just really fantastic. And again, John Cena's just done. I think that's one of the reasons why this series was greenlit to begin with, is that they saw they had something in Cena.
So, oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's really delivered. I have total respect for him. His acting chops, I thought, were great. He's actually pulled me in. He can be that, you know, pitiful kind of emotional guy and still be a douche at the same time. By the way, that was
both at the same time.
That
was
him really playing the piano.
Yeah,
he
does play piano in real life. Yeah. And so that was him playing the Home Sweet Home on the piano at the end of the last episode. So
very cool.
Yeah, it really has been great. And again, we get a finale next week, so that'll be a great way to tie up this series on HBO Max.
Now, did you see the trailer for next week's episode?
Not yet.
No, I haven't seen it either, but they say it plays after the show. I didn't see it. But
I heard it was out there. Yeah, it's out there. We'll watch it right after the show today. I'll show where it is. It's really easy to find. All right, well, let's move into the news section. We had a bunch of stuff this week. So Ironheart. We know the series Ironheart's coming to Disney Plus, featuring Riri Williams as a character who, in the comics, gets access to Tony Stark's technology, and she's an incredibly bright.
She's an MIT student.
MIT
brilliant.
Student, just a brilliant scientist, but ends up getting access to Tony Stark's technology and is able to make a suit for herself. We knew this is a series that had been announced a while, like over a year ago, coming to Disney Plus. They're starting filming of that series in April in Georgia. So we believe Riri Williams is going to be in Black Panther, Wakanda Forever.
Yeah, yeah.
As an MIT student, so right. featured to some extent, whether a primary or a secondary character or a cameo, we don't know.
They were filming on campus. They were filming up there, so yeah. we're assuming, yeah.
So I believe that character will be introduced in Black Panther Wakanda Forever, but you know they're starting filming of this series in April, which you know leads me to believe this is one of those Disney Plus series we'll see probably early to mid next year.
Yeah.
Come to Disney Plus. So great. Hopefully. Yeah, awesome. Yeah. You know, so we're that's really cool. And then there was some news: Russell Crowe getting cast in the Spider-Man spinoff movie, the Kraven the Hunter movie that's going to be featuring Anthony Taylor Johnson as Kraven the Hunter.
Right.
So Russell Crowe had been cast in a role in that movie. Do we know what he's playing?
No idea. No, nobody knows. I think it's so undisclosed.
So interesting that he's playing. Zeus in Thor Love and Thunder.
Yes, that's been confirmed.
We know that for sure, but now he's being cast in a Sony movie playing some other role. I don't think he's playing Zeus again. I mean, he could, but I doubt it.
No.
But
interesting. I think he's playing the Kraven's father, the matriarch that has built this and younger, what's his name? That's playing Kraven the Hunter.
Anthony Taylor Johnson.
Anthony Taylor Johnson's father in this. That's my prediction.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. Yeah. But hey, you know, good actor for, you know, it means he's not shying away from these comic book roles, which is great.
Yeah. And probably can pull off the South African. I would just assume that Kraven the Hunter's from Africa.
I believe he is from somewhere in Africa. I'm not sure where. I'd have to re-look that up. I don't know.
So I would think that, you know, Russell Crowe could play a great South African.
I'm sure he could. Big news, you know, the Batman movie tickets went on sale on Wednesday or Thursday this week, this past week.
Mm-hmm.
And you bought tickets for us to go see the movie.
Yes, sir. Thursday night.
Thursday the 3rd?
The 3rd.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. You know, the official release date is March 4th on Friday, but it does come out, you know, Thursday evening. There were some like pre-screening seats on Wednesday, actually, right?
That you were Tuesday night IMAX. There were only
special screening.
Yeah, there's a special screening. Only shitty seats were left, and it was a Tuesday night. My only fear there is that there could be. I gotta ignore the internet Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, we're gonna have to go dark. 2 days. That
week. We'll go dark just that week.
But we'll see that Thursday night. So we'll see it, you know, as soon as we can. I mean, and we got seats to go see it that weekend, and that is the weekend of Comic-Con. So it'll be a lot of stuff. I'm sure there'll be a lot of people talking about it.
Yeah.
That weekend, and we'll cover it. We'll do our full review of that movie when we do our episode that Sunday.
Perfect.
That'll be great. And we got two Marvel movies or Marvel/Sony movies. Nominated for Oscars, right? So Spider-Man, No Way Home, and Shang-Chi were both nominated for visual effects Oscars,
Good for them.
Hey, you know, rarely, if ever, are these Marvel/DC movies ever, you know, nominated for Oscars. I mean, it's just, they're not Oscar-worthy performances, generally. I'd say generally, because, you know, we remember that Black Panther was nominated for Best Picture, and that was, you know, anomaly in regards to these types of movies, but for lots of different reasons it was nominated for Best Picture. But you know, these two movies, you know, visual effects, absolutely. I mean, the both these movies were off the charts from a visual effects perspective. Oh, and
absolutely.
Hey, you know, if nothing else, it just keeps them in the mind of people as the, you know, as the Oscar season goes on. I believe the Oscars are the first week in March or something like that, I believe.
Award shows, kind of over them, but...
Yeah, exactly. I mean...
They fucked William Dafoe. To be honest with you, he deserved something. I thought his performance was excellent, but that's just my opinion. Titanium got fired up for a second. Just my opinion.
But by the way, Oscar winner, William Dafoe, you know. So absolutely. People forget that he was... he is an Oscar winner. All right, and then we... So let's talk Super Bowl trailers. So... I believe we got some like light confirmation this weekend or this past week that we will see a Moon Knight trailer
with new footage.
What I've heard is it's not going to be a trailer. It's going to be a scene from the show. So it's going to be, instead of, you know, the kind of the teaser trailer we got a couple weeks ago, it's going to be a scene from one of the episodes that's more extended. With character dialogue and maybe even seeing Moon Knight, who knows what scene we're going to see. but it's going to be a scene from the show.
That'd be
and,
great.
That's what we're going to get during the Super Bowl with a, you know, kind of a final tagline, you know, Moon Knight drops, you know, March 30th or whatever. And then we're supposed to be getting as well a full Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness trailer with a scene as well, so with some dialogue there. Nice. So I'm super excited now. Again, those were two that you and I were both had spoken about last week that we were looking forward to seeing during the Super Bowl. Give me anything. I mean, the hype and the around the Doctor Strange movie and the, you know, rumors about what's happening in the movie. And now there's, they've released some new images from the movie, as well as some new promotional posters that are showing like multiple versions of Doctor Strange that are going to be in this movie. Again, it is a multiverse movie, so there are supposed to be multiple versions of Doctor Strange in this movie. You know, we saw the kind of in the teaser trailer that the what we think is the Strange Supreme version of Doctor Strange. But we may also be getting, you know, what they call Defender Strange, which is a different version of Doctor Strange. So we got some of the promotional footage there. But, hey, anything more you give us now to kind of light the fire and get some more hype, you know, even more rumors around, you know, version of the Illuminati coming to the movie. And, you know, hey, is there going to be an alternate version of Iron Man?
Do we get introduced to Reed Richards?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's so much, you know, hey, wouldn't this be cool if it happened type of thing. And again, I think what we see this weekend, it'll be great. I mean, it'll just get us more excited for this movie.
We need something. That doesn't come out till May,
right.
May 6th. So we need something. There's a long lull.
And imagine if that had this movie stuck with its original release date, which was March 25th or something like that, I think was the original release date. But imagine if we had that. I mean, the hype train would be,
insane.
You know, right now be insane. They'd be promoting this like crazy. And they do got to keep people interested because they did push it back a couple of months. And hopefully we're going to, I believe what we're going to see this weekend is going to be awesome.
I hope so. I'm recording the Super Bowl just for that. Just in case
right? Just
somebody's talking
it?
In my ear. Well, I can go back and watch it again. And even though it'll be online immediately after, I still like to watch it.
Well, and the other big thing that you saw is that DC is planning on releasing some footage as well, which we kind of got a teaser of that. We got an early version of that released online, right?
Oh, you know, Shazam, you and I are both looking forward to it.
Black Adam, you mean?
I mean, I'm sorry. Black Adam looks absolutely spectacular. The Rock is going to crush it. He's a beast. But I was wondering about, you know, Adam Smasher and some of the other characters, Hawkman. I was Dr. Fate. I'm wondering a little bit about, is it going to be cheesy with all those new characters bringing in? And we got kind of a look at them. And I'm telling you, Hawkman absolutely exceeded my expectations. So I cannot wait to get a little more of that. I think we're going to see that same thing in the Super Bowl as a little teaser, like a sizzle reel. Because we saw some of the Flash.
The tagline of it was "The world needs heroes," right? That was the tagline of the DC kind of, and I believe it was kind of a combination of scenes from The Batman, right, as well as some scenes from Black Adam
and The Flash,
right?
Yeah, and Aquaman. We got a couple of looks at Aquaman in his new outfit and sitting on a different throne.
I tell you, DC needs to ramp up the hype a little bit. And we need something from them this weekend.
I was just literally reading something where McFarlane Toys, you know, the this is Legends series, Marvel's Legends series.
Those are Hasbro, I believe.
Hasbro, right. But McFarlane also makes figures. And
they're mostly DC.
DC.
Yeah.
They're the number one figure sold, like the Suicide Squad figures, the new Batman. I have Batman and the Riddler here. Those are the number one figures sold. They beat all the other figures. And I was like, wow, really? Because that's huge. That's a huge, like, indicator of.
So McFarlane Toys, so Todd McFarlane, an incredibly successful comic book illustrator, had an enormous run in Spider-Man, was the real creator behind the Venom character and how that character was, you know, drawn and portrayed. And so he had, and then he ended up leaving Marvel a few years later, created his own comic book called Spawn and a couple of other ones. But then he created a toy company called McFarlane Toys, and his toys, you know, they're incredibly detailed and incredibly well done.
Yeah.
And they really have tied, they have a deal with the DC characters, as Titanium was talking about. And most of their toys that they have for comic books are DC related, and they're extremely popular.
Oh yeah, the number one selling figures for DC right now is the number one. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, you know, look, I know you're really looking forward to the Batman, and I'm cautiously optimistic. You know, I want it to be good. I do because look. We were incredibly spoiled with the Christopher Nolan movies. I think all three of those movies were just, as far as Batman movies were concerned, they were the three best Batman movies we had ever seen. Even going back to the original Tim Burton versions, which we're nostalgic about those because they were...
They're nostalgic, but I absolutely agree with you. The Christopher Nolan movies were absolutely...
I just think the way Christian Bale portrayed the character of Bruce Wayne and the history behind it, I just think he just did such a great job. And you know, we had just some great villains and great portrayals in those movies. I think Christopher Nolan just really knocked it out of the park. And when they decided to end that, I was like, okay, what are they going to do with this franchise? And when Ben Affleck was cast, I was like, okay, we kind of have a path forward for this character. Well, we saw how that only played out in two movies, frankly. Well, and he's going to be in another one in the Flash movie, but you know, he was only in Batman versus Superman and the Justice League. And that was kind of lukewarm reception of him as Batman, but nowhere close to what we saw with Christian Bale. And so, I mean, where are we going with this character? And I think Robert Pattinson has an opportunity now to grasp hold of this character and take it forward for several years, if not several movies.
Absolutely.
How that ties into DC, EU, and you know, the Justice League movies. I mean, and again, we have some theories around how Flashpoint may bring them all together or something like
reset
that.
Reset the whole series.
Right.
Reset it, yeah.
But, you know, he has a chance to establish himself as the next version of Batman for the next 8 years.
Yeah.
You know, and... I'm looking forward to it. I think, you know, from what we've seen in the trailers and the scenes we've seen, I'm optimistic, but you know, I'm also kind of, at least I'm a little leery of, you know, what's going to happen with this franchise because it's not directly tied in. And that's where I'm a little concerned.
Yeah. It's definitely a different, well, he's much younger, first of all, so it's not picking up anywhere that we would know. I'm interested. I have more faith in it than I think you do. I think it's going to do big numbers. I've been known to state that it will do close to Spider-Man numbers. I don't know if that's going to be true. I want it to.
Well, Batman's your favorite character.
He's absolutely my favorite DC character, for sure. So, for me, there's a lot of pressure on, you know, Matt Reeves and what he does with the character. As same with Robert Pattinson, there's a lot of pressure from me on them. So we'll see what happens. I'm more optimistic. I think it's going to get great reviews, and I think it's going to kill it in the theaters.
We'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah. They've got a lot to look forward to there. So, all right, well, let's jump into our topic of the week this week, of course, brought to us by our friends over at Studio GG Studios.
Studio GG Studios.
Hope you guys are doing well down there. I mean, I know it's been a rough few months, but look, get the studio back up and running because we need some more stuff.
Oh, it's back up and running. They at the end of every YouTube show, I put the superhero song that they did called Black Viper. Excellent. I put a little clip of it at the end of every YouTube show, so check it out. But thank you, Studio GG Studios, Corn on the Cob, the Man Band. Lovely stuff. Thank you.
Thanks for supporting us, guys. You guys are great. So our topic of the week, and as we'll kind of continue with what we did last week. Last week, we did a kind of a recap of the Daredevil Netflix series. And this week, we're going to do, you know, what I believe is the second best of all of the Netflix series, which was the Punisher series. We'll just kind of recap. They had two seasons, and we'll kind of talk about how this character was introduced and then, you know, where the series themselves went. Again, we spoke last week of there has been more and more confirmation of Jon Bernthal, who plays the Punisher in both of these series on Netflix, and did a enormously incredible, awesome job as the Punisher. Yeah. I mean, literally was the perfect casting for this character.
Yeah, hard to think anybody else could play it.
But for there, you know, there's been talk now of him coming back into the Marvel Universe as the Punisher. And the real question is when, how, and where. And we'll kind of figure that out, I'm sure, over the next several months. But these two series, he was introduced in Daredevil, the Netflix series, season 2. He was introduced as a character. And for those of us who are comic book nerds, when we heard the Punisher was coming to this Netflix series of Daredevil, we were like, oh, yeah. Are you kidding? And so originally, just kind of some history around the Punisher character in the comic books, he was originally introduced in a Spider-Man comic as kind of this vigilante character many, many years ago, but had a long tie-in with Daredevil as well. So was featured in Spider-Man comics several times, and then was in Daredevil comics a lot too. So he had a big history with Daredevil, yeah, the character in the comic books. Ultimately ended up getting his own series, became incredibly popular. I'd say in the, you know, mid to late 80s, early 90s, the Punisher comic books were some of the best-selling, most purchased comic book. He was an incredibly popular character. As a matter of fact, I've issue number one of his first series that he ever had sitting up in front of me here. Very, you know, sold incredibly well, was incredibly popular, really big popular comic book character.
Kind of embraced by the military community and some of those badasses, Green, yep, Berets, and they really embraced this character.
So
in the
comics, he was a Vietnam War veteran who had come back, you know, after the war, and his family ends up getting murdered, and then, you know, he becomes a vigilante that's, you know, out to take down any criminal out there by any means necessary, and uses any, you know, anything he can to do it. And, you know, kind of one of these just violent, and some of the similar reasons why Wolverine was very popular. He was just at times incredibly violent and incredibly vicious, but it was against people that, you know, you needed a violent and vicious person to take out.
Absolutely.
And it was really, really well received. But he ended up was in Daredevil season 2, just killed it in that series. And then he ended up getting his own limited series on Netflix. And they were like, we're going to give you your own show. And so the first season was released in November of 2017. He got his own series. This first season really centered around him trying to get revenge for the death of his family.
Yeah.
And in the Netflix series, he's an Afghan war veteran and not a Vietnam War veteran. Right. Obviously, they moved the timeline forward for the Netflix series. He was a...
Had to modernize it.
Mm-hmm. Right. He was in a special forces unit in the army and was in Afghanistan and came back to the United States and was just like happy to be back with his family. He had wife and he had, I believe, two daughters, were his family. I was just kind of happy to be out of war and just be living in America again. And then his family ends up getting killed tragically, and it just sets him off. Yeah. It's just like, you know, what the F? He, you know, who's after me? Why? And all of a sudden.
Kind of a professional hit move at the merry-go-round. He's having a day with
his family to the park, and they're riding a merry-go-round, and they basically get gunned down.
What was brilliant about that series is that you didn't know the whole story. They would do flashbacks throughout the series or the season, and then you kind of put it all together at the end of the season, which was great. I love when storytellers do that.
Yeah, and the main characters of the first season were Jon Bernthal as the Punisher, obviously, and then we had Eben Moss Bacharach, who played Micro, who in the comic books, Micro was an essential character. He was kind of the guy in the chair for the Punisher. He was an incredibly brilliant, you know, kind of computer, you know, geek who could hack into any network and was kind of like the eyes and the ears of the Punisher. But we get introduced to his character in the first season of this show as well. He happens to be a former NSA analyst who. They tried to kill, and he kind of faked his own death, so everybody thinks he's dead, but now he's alive, and he ends up helping the Punisher because he knows the Punisher's after the same people who kind of were after him. We got another big character, Ben Barnes, plays Billy Russo, who happens to be Jigsaw in the comic books, and Jigsaw is the Punisher's kind of main antagonist, his biggest
another mercenary
rival.
Ex.
Right, but in this particular series, it's his best friend. So Billy Russo and John Bernthal, or Frank Castle, were best friends, and they were in the same unit in the Army, same Special Forces unit. And now Ben Russo is working for this private security contracting company called Anvil. And so he's kind of made it out, and he's making all kinds of money because they're doing all this private security. Well, come to find out, this Anvil company is also committing a lot of crimes, as well as, like, you know, winning these government contracts that they shouldn't be. And there's this big controversy around that. But there's one other big main character in the series, and played by Amber Rose Riva. She plays DHS agent Milani, I think is her last name. Madani, Agent Madani. She kind of is investigating Anvil, and, you know, doesn't think they're in the up and up, and she's sure that something's going on. Then she hears about the Punisher, and then she's ultimately after him as well. And, you know, there's a whole big thing about Madani and Russo end up, like, you know, having a relationship, but then she finds out Russo's a cold-blooded killer. And this entire season is really around Frank Castle investigating the people that are ultimately responsible for the death of his family. And we come to find out that his entire Special Forces unit, to some extent, was being used for kind of devious purposes, and they were killing off some of the people that kind of knew them, yeah. Right? And that's why Frank Castle was targeted, because some of the things that they were doing in Afghanistan were for this company that ultimately became Anvil. And so Frank Castle's family ended up becoming victims because they were trying to kill off people that knew what was going on there.
Yeah, if it got out, it would be problems for the big company, yeah.
Yeah, but so that whole season really centers around that. And the one thing I'll mention, this is something that we expressed some concerns about last week. The Punisher series on Netflix are incredibly violent and incredibly brutal.
Yeah.
Like the fight scenes and they're stabbing people in the eye. They're shooting people directly in the head. I mean, the blood and violence in both of the seasons were off the charts. And that's where we're like, well, they're going to have to tone that down a little bit
for Disney Plus.
Yeah. But, in Netflix, it worked really well. Frank Castle is in the comics, he's a badass, and in the Netflix series, he's a badass too. I mean, he, you know, has been beaten down so many times, but he just ends up like just.
The final fight scene is unbelievable. Oh. There. They kill each other almost.
Off the charts. Yeah. He and Russo ended up fighting each other. They end up meeting each other at the merry-go-round where his family was killed, and they have this big fight scene. Madani ends up getting shot in the head and somehow survives. She makes it to season two. But he and Russo end up getting in this massive fight, and he could have killed him, but instead of killing him, he decides to disfigure him. So he basically smashes his face into a mirror that's on the merry-go-round and completely cuts his entire face up. And again, in the comic books, Jigsaw is a character whose face is completely ripped to shreds and stitched back together, and that's why he's called Jigsaw. So that was kind of like the way that they introduced kind of the Jigsaw part of his character. But that's how the season ends, is him basically, you know, smashing his face into the mirror and disfigures him. He's ultimately, you know, freed by the DHS. Frank Castle's cleared by DHS and freed and kind of able to go on his own way type of thing. But that's how the first season ends. It's fantastic. I mean, really, if you haven't watched the Punisher series on Netflix and you're looking for something to watch, it's great.
You better do it quick, though, because they're pulling it.
February 28th, I believe it is being pulled off Netflix, right? Yeah. So, yeah.
That and a bunch of other shows, Jessica Jones, Daredevil.
Oh, well, that's when the contract expires. Yeah. So if you want to see these, you better watch them before the end of February. Season 2 came out in January 2019. And shortly after this season aired, literally a week after the season released, they came out and told us that it had been canceled. And we're like, whoa, was it really bad? This was kind of the precursor to the announcement that Marvel was ending its relationship with Netflix, right? Yeah. But this was kind of the precursor to that. We got this series dropped in January 2019, and then literally like a week later, they're like, hey, Punisher series is finally canceled. We're like, oh my God, is this really bad? Well, season two, in my perspective, was better than season one.
Absolutely better.
It was off the charts good. So Frank Castle's just kind of freelancing. He's on his own. He's just kind of out, like, wandering. He ends up at a bar in the middle of nowhere, meets a bartender, hooks up with her. There's some young girl in this bar. She's getting beat up in a bathroom. He kind of intervenes, of course. That's what he does, and he saves her. But come to find out, there's people after this girl. Her name's Amy. Trying to kill her, and then he kind of takes her under his wing and decides to protect her. And we get introduced to this new character. His name's Pilgrim. He's like a white supremacist, alt-right religious zealot. He's like part of a church group, but he's, you know, thinks that he's everything he's doing is the right thing because it's in the name of God and all these other things.
Very powerful.
But we find out that he's been hired to kill Amy. By this very influential businessman named Andrew Schultz. And so we find out that's who he's working for, and they're off to kill. So literally the first few episodes is like the two of them running from all these people trying to kill Amy. And, you know, and what Frank does to some of them is off the charts. Great. We do see Jigsaw. He's in the hospital with all these bandages over his face, and Madani, who had survived the gunshot to her head, confronts him in the hospital. Well, he's got amnesia. He doesn't remember who he is or where he is or what's going on. He doesn't know anything, doesn't remember anything about what he did and the big bad criminal that he was in the first season. She doesn't believe him, but that's where he is. And he ends up getting released from the hospital, is disfigured, but he gets plastic surgery, so it's not that bad. But he's going to therapy with his therapist, and his therapist... they end up having a relationship together as well. And she's a nut job. We've come to find out she's crazy as well. She's a therapist, but she's also crazy. But Jigsaw is having these nightmares about the skull icon on the Punisher's uniform. He doesn't know what it's for, but he keeps having these nightmares. He can't remember anything. But ultimately, Frank and Amy end up going back to New York City, and, Jigsaw, once he gets out, he basically decides to put together a bunch of mercenaries, and they start robbing banks. And, you know, this brings attention, and Madani says that he had escaped the hospital and he was out on his own. And so now Frank Castle's like, I'm going to go find this guy. And he ends up finding and confronting Russo, and Russo sees him in the Punisher outfit, and he basically flips his shit. He's like, oh my God, that's the guy that I've been seeing in my nightmares, right? So it triggers
his memories.
Right, some memories and things like that. And then he starts remembering who this guy was and what he did to him and everything else. They end up capturing the Punisher, basically beat him almost near death, but, you know, Frank Castle is superhuman to some extent, you know, and is able to, like, you know, get out
He's
of there.
He's not, but they make him out to be.
Yeah. But he ends up getting arrested, and then we got a cameo from Deborah Ann Woll, who plays from the Daredevil series. She's now a lawyer. She comes and kind of represents him and gets him and helps him escape from the hospital with Madani. But ultimately, Frank Castle confronts Russo, ends up killing him, ends up going to the Schultz family, who finds out that they're, the ones that sent, so ends up killing Pilgrim as well, goes to the Schultz family, kills the wife, and then gives a gun to the husband and says, you can either kill yourself or I'm going to come kill you later. And so he ends up committing suicide, and the series ends. But it's incredibly brutal,
violent.
Yeah. But again, from my perspective, I think, what John Bernthal did with this character is just so spot on and so perfect. And I really do hope they find a way to bring him back, because he really has done just such a great job with his character. And I think there is room for the Punisher in the MCU. And I think he can be used in a way that, would allow his violence and his, kind of no-nonsense kind of in the right purpose. I think there's ways for them to do that.
I can't wait. I know they have big plans for him, and I hope it all comes to fruition, because I can't wait.
Yeah, but
great character.
as we said, if you haven't seen these series, please go watch them. Again, they're going to get pulled from Netflix, I think, on February 28th. Go check them out because they're not going to be around for a long time, but it's really worth a watch. And if you're looking to binge something, it's, again, very well done. Now, the one thing that Titanium, I've talked about the Netflix series before, each series is 13 episodes, so there's 26 total episodes of The Punisher. And the fact that they had to do 13 episodes does draw the plot out over a long time. So you're looking at 13 hours. Well, you know, each episode's like 47 minutes or whatever, but 13 episodes of 47 minutes. Some of the plot gets strung out a lot, but I'm telling you, with this series especially, the action sequences and the what they did in each one of these episodes is just off the charts good. So
go check it out for sure.
Please do. This is definitely number two on my list of must-watch Netflix series if you haven't seen them. So
Daredevil.
Go check it out. Daredevil number one, this one number two, and next week we'll go over number three, which will be Jessica Jones.
Yeah. Very good.
All right.
Excellent. Let's ring the bell, Professor.
All right. Well, that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week for more Super Talk. To get in touch with us on social media, hit us up via email at supertalkpodcast@outlook.com or at supertalkpod on Twitter. Until then, stay super, everyone. We'll be right back.